Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
And I'm Jordan Crook.
And once again, it is just the two of us, but I am excited to be here to talk about Maniac, a series that, Jordan, I can tell that you are very excited to continue watching, right?
Like, violently opposed to continue watching
it. We'll get to that in just a minute. We also, as usual, will talk a little bit about the week's streaming news. Feels like it's been a really long week, for reasons that we don't necessarily have to dwell on this media and tech-focused podcast, but it has. It's been a long week. Hasn't been a lot of streaming news, but one thing that was interesting was College Humor, which is obviously the funny video site owned by IAC, launched its own subscription video service, which is called Dropout, and it's going to be a combination of videos and comics. And then, you know, those sort of like text messaging or chat stories, it's going to have some of those.
I wonder how well executed those are going to be, because I think there's a huge opportunity to like build out books and movies and stuff kind of in that format. That like there's a new movie coming out soon, right? About the guy who's looking for searching, I think is what it's called.
Oh yeah, that came out a month ago.
Right. Okay. So it came out. I'm totally up with the times. But the idea of like a whole story living on a computer, you know, or like on a screen and like watching it play out. And I'm curious how I think it's all like execution based, because they've tried it a few times and it hasn't quite been, I think, what it can be. So anyways, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's like a whole so there's some apps. I think one of them is Hooked. Which is actually kind of, it's funny because luckily I was one of the first people to write about the app. I'm not like a huge fan of like text message stories myself, but just because at TechCrunch sometimes we're one of the first people to write about a company, that is consistently one of my best performing stories, just because people keep looking up Hooked. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so like I think it definitely has like, because whatever we experience on the internet, whether it's like through text message conversations or phone calls or participating on social media or the videos we watch or the news we consume, like those experiences are just as like emotionally real as they are if those things are happening like in real life, I guess. And so, I don't know, I think people find that kind of storytelling super relatable just on that level. And then whether or not it can be elevated to like an actual interesting plot is another question. But I think that that content type is really compelling to people.
And I think it's also interesting how some of these services, College Humor and then also DC Comics, are, you know, they're trying to do a subscription service, but they sort of, I mean, I think there's a number of different reasons to do it this way, but I imagine part of it is just there's so many different subscription video services out there. And so if you want to and some of them are like Netflix, right, which is just have so much money. So if you want to compete without necessarily spending billions of dollars, one of the ways you can do it is by bringing in more different kinds of content types.
Yeah, 100%.
So you're going to sign up for this?
No. I don't think so. It really sounds like more your thing. The comics.
A little bit, yeah.
Threw me off, because that when you if you're going to be serving comics as well, that tells me that the type of videos and content you're going to be giving me just isn't in my wheelhouse, so to speak. I mean, just for context, like I'm currently binging The Crown.
I think that's totally fair. I will say they did openly say they're not, because you know Netflix is doing, you know, a comedy like stand-up specials every week. This is not really trying to compete with that. It's more the way they described it was world building sketch comedy, so it's definitely aimed at this sort of Comic-Con type audience. I will also say, I mean, I did sort of ask specifically because I think a lot of the worlds that they're a lot of the audiences they're trying to address in terms of gaming, comedy, science fiction, comic books, those are all worlds that, I mean, I think everyone thinks of as this very kind of male you know, fan base, and they are trying to be more diverse both in terms of the talent and the audience they're reaching. But they do have a clear idea of the audience they're trying to reach, and you're maybe not quite, your interests don't quite align with it.
I will say, though, that, and this is like slightly off topic, but you've got me started, so blame yourself.
Here we go.
I think speaking of like opportunities for content creation, like a scripted or a reality series on esports, I think would do. And I'm not talking about like a documentary about what esports is. I'm talking about like following a team or following like several individuals who are pros, because the amount of drama that goes down. Okay, so like there's the base level drama of like what they call roster mania, like all of the switching of teams and stuff like that. Then there's like all the trouble they get into on their Twitch, you know, streams. Then there's like the fact that they're all like cheating on each other, or like their girlfriends are all cheating on them, it seems like, at least in Call of Duty. And then on top of that, you have the fact that they're not safe. Like they're like shootings, like Dr. Disrespect had his house shot at twice in the last few weeks.
Holy shit.
There was the incident in Orlando recently. Like even last year, there were like bomb threats at one of the biggest CWL Call of Duty events that like paused play for like hours at a time, 3 or 4 times over the course of one weekend. Like the whole building had to be evacuated because kids were issuing bomb threats. So like, I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of drama. And plus these are like, you know, 19, 20, 21 year old kids who are making way more than us, and presumably spending it in outrageous ways. I just think there's so much to be had there. Like whoever, if you were planning on writing a scripted series or creating a new reality television show, I would say to look at that space. I would watch it.
Well, in your copious free time, Jordan, you should either write the pilot script. I would happily write it with you, or we should put together a proposal for the video team.
Oh yeah,
I'm just saying, you know, sounds like it could be a good TechCrunch show.
I mean, I think everyone who knows me knows this, and even people who don't, I'm really more of an idea person than an executor. I got a lot of ideas and very little time or drive to execute on them. So maybe I do need a partnership with you. Maybe we should team up and do something
All right,
interesting.
We'll continue the conversation offline.
Offline, yeah.
Well, I might check out Dropout. I think I'm also not quite in that target audience, because I mean it's interesting to me, but I'm not like a hard, like a really serious gaming or comedy. I mean, I watch comedy, but like I wouldn't necessarily subscribe to a service specifically for that. But if any of you are gonna check it out, let us know. In the meantime, we can move on to Maniac, which is a 10-episode miniseries on Netflix. Is created by Patrick Somerville, who is a writer on The Leftovers, but I think it got a lot more attention because it was directed by Cary Fukunaga, who directed the first season of True Detective, and also had Emma Stone and Jonah Hill as its stars. It's kind of hard to summarize what the plot of the show is about.
Yeah. I have a lot of, like, it's hard to define a lot of things about this show because, like, I don't necessarily understand the rules of the world that they live in. Like, in some ways, it looks like old school, like the clothes that the men wear are like very 60s-esque. And then we're clearly like somewhere in the near future, maybe. I don't know. It could be a totally different universe. Like, I'm very confused by that, and I haven't gotten a whole lot of clarity thus far. And yeah, I don't quite, given how far I've watched and how little it holds my attention, I'm not sure that I know how to talk about the plot either. So I'm going to throw back to you now.
Fair enough. So my interpretation, which is absolutely not definitive in it, and the stuff that I've read doesn't seem to come down clearly either, is that this takes place either in an alternate present, or even if it's maybe not even an alternate present, but an alternate version of like the 1980s or 90s. Because
alternate present felt like a little bit of a Freudian slip there.
Yeah, wishful thinking.
Anyways, go on.
We'll get there. Because like it, a lot of the technology you see on the one hand is science fictional, but it's science fictional in a way that you would have seen it in like Alien or one of the science fiction movies of the 80s.
Like it's all the 80s or 90s. Yeah, it's very weird that way.
So they have like clearly like some really advanced technology, like robots, but at the same time, there's no smartphones or laptops or any of the things that we have now.
Yeah, there's like 90s desktops, you know, with like the green matrix style, you know, interface with green and black. And like, I don't know, it's very odd. Like, it's very, very odd. And there's this thing, the thing that gets most of my attention is this whole system called Ad Buddies. And then I think there's another one, PallyAd. And they're like competing right. ad platforms that like subsidize what you buy. It's almost like having stamps you've collected by viewing ads. It's just like, no wonder people are dealing with mental health issues if like your whole life is sustained by viewing ads. Like, it's nutso. And they're like actual people that come and sit with you and talk to you.
Right, exactly. That's what's so surprising and funny about it, because I think when I first heard about it, I thought it would just, yeah, it was just going to be like, you know, like AR goggles or something like that. But it's a literal person who just follows you around and reads ads to you.
It's nuts. And like personalized ads. Like at one point, he's like, you spend 80% of your income on your rent. Like, consider signing up with this whatever service or taking a loan or whatever. But like, he's like announcing it, that his ad buddy is announcing this on the train. It's just so embarrassing. Yeah. It's weird, man. It's weird. And not in a way that I'm like, oh, I'm so curious. In a way that I'm like, this is fucking weird.
Well, I mean, one of the things that is also kind of in that vein is they use a lot of real New York locations, but they transform them. And so, for example, Jonah Hill's character, Owen, he lives on Roosevelt Island, which in real life is this sort of little tiny island between Queens and Manhattan, to where the Cornell Tech campus is. But there's not, but it's like this, like they've shot it on Roosevelt Island, but they added all this kind of like weird 80s tech stuff to it. And I think they do that with a number of different locations. You probably haven't seen like how they altered the statue of Extra Liberty.
Yeah, what? Like, it all just feels like, I don't know, maybe you have to finish this miniseries and like all of these like references kind of come together to make like sense in the story. But as like as someone who I feel like I have a lot of patience with shows to get into them, and it does not pique my curiosity in a way that I wish that it would, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems a little too over the top. Maybe that's what it is. Like, it's just so silly to me. It kind of reminds me of, what's that, Idiocracy?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, strong Idiocracy vibes. And I don't really like that either. So maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Well, it's this weird thing where I think there is a certain logic to how the world works, but I'm still not totally clear on what it is. And so it does feel just very random. Where on the one hand, it's clearly they're less, in some categories, way less technologically advanced than we are, and others more advanced. And so, like, and you're like, oh, there are robots here? That's kind of strange, but they don't have smartphones? I don't understand what's going on. And so that's, like, one level to it. And then there's the other level of where there's this sort of zany world, but the characters are not, like, fun, zany characters by a long shot. So the plot kind of revolves around this medical test, this test of this new drug. And so our two main characters are both people who have these mental and emotional problems. Jonah Hill's character kind of has these hallucinations. Emma Stone's character is basically like addicted to this drug because of this tragedy in her past. So they're both like I don't want to like trivialize it, but like they're definitely like not, they like, you know, they don't behave the way you'd sort of expect normal protagonists to behave, and they're sort of kind of hard to spend a lot of time with.
Yes. And I actually really like Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, and like not every single thing they've ever done, but I really, you know, tend to enjoy their work. And like, I guess that's not like untrue for this either, because like they're interesting actors and like dynamic actors. I think Jonah Hill in particular like finds a way to be funny and intense like simultaneously really well, which is I think hard to do. But yeah, they're just it's it's just a very confusing show. Like, I almost wish that more was spoon-fed. Like, I don't feel like I should be this confused, but yeah. Do you like it, Anthony?
I would say I'm more intrigued by it than liking it so far, because again, I just don't, even so, I'm four episodes in and I still feel like I don't have a great read on like the exact tone that they're going for. Like, how much should I be laughing? Because I'm definitely not laughing that much, but there are times where it does feel a little kind of zany, but not funny. But I do think, like, it's, I've never quite seen this mix of elements before. The other aspect of it, which it sort of takes a little while to get to, is the fact that basically, and this isn't really a spoiler because, A, I'm only four episodes in, and this is kind of in the concept, is that once you, after the first couple of episodes, as I understand it, they really get into the drug test, which means that many episodes are just these different hallucinations that the Emma Stone and Jonah Hill characters are sharing. And like, these are not just like very, like the fourth episode is basically one giant hallucination where there are a couple living on Long Island trying to rob this fur store. It's like, it's really hard again to describe, but I, as I understand it, it's basically going to be them sort of trying to work through some of their issues in the context of all these different hallucinogenic stories.
Which, like, are they, they're shared though? Because I haven't gotten that far. So like, they're sharing a hallucination. So they're both in it together and seeing the same thing. And yet, like, these are, I guess these are supposed to be, like, universal experiences that would help people with whatever the root of the issue is. Because I still don't know that either. Like, what exactly they...
It's, right. So it's not
being
totally
treated for, you know?
Yeah, it's clearly treatment for some sort of mental or emotional problem, but they don't really... They're not really clear on, like, what it is. And then... The mechanism is also unclear. It's basically you take two different pills. There's an A pill and a B pill. And the A pill, I think, just makes you sort of relive some of your terrible memories. And then the B pill is like the one that's a little bit stranger. And apparently, at least when you're like hooked up to this computer, you're having like shared hallucinations. So at one point, Emma Stone, I think, gets to play like an elf. Like Legolas, like in this like fantasy quest.
Okay. Like, okay. Here's what I think. Like, there's two points. One is that you like have these rules, right, for the worlds that you build. And like some of the rules stay the same as the world we live in right now. And then other rules change. And like all of that is clearly defined like in a story. And I'm not saying that this show hasn't done that. But I think there are so many weird curveballs that it like really throws me off. That's point one. And point two is that it feels like a lot of things put together. Like you get a hint of Ready Player One and a hint, like it almost feels like they took a piece of everything and put it in there. And I feel more like, oh man, I wish I was watching The Matrix with two pills, or like, I wish I was, do you know what I mean? Like I feel more drawn to all the things it feels like it's pulled from than it itself.
No, I think that's fair, because there's this element of that it's clearly like a mix up, or I mean a mashup.
It's like a mashup,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, of like different pop culture elements. And it hasn't quite shaken out to me yet as its own thing. It feels like it's distinct in that I haven't quite seen all these different like flavors put together. And so that's why I'm enjoying it and probably going to finish it. But I agree that it doesn't feel like it's its own thing. It just feels like, oh, I can kind of see where that's from. I can kind of see what that's from. I don't understand quite how all these things fit together.
Right, exactly. Which makes me feel like I'm like spending more time on each individual detail than like seeing the whole picture. Which I feel like in another miniseries, which like to me a miniseries is like, you know, a really long movie. And in any other one, I feel like you spend your whole time really trying to figure out the whole picture, and like what we're getting at. And I just can't seem to focus in on that with this because I'm so distracted by these weird things.
Well, I think it's also maybe interesting to compare it to The Leftovers, which Patrick Somerville was a writer on. Nick Cuse, who's one of the other writers on Maniac, was also a writer on The Leftovers. And then Justin Theroux shows up in both shows. And it, because, like, I recently finally finished all three seasons of The Leftovers. It took me a little while, but I'm all done with Leftovers. Wow,
good.
And it's amazing.
Yes.
And that is a show where, you know, I watched that with my roommate, and he felt very strongly that it was in some ways similar to your response to Maniac, where he was just like, there's so many different things happening. I don't understand how this fits. I don't understand what the rules are, and it feels very arbitrary. Again, this is what he said. Whereas to me, it like made a, it was a show that made total emotional sense. And so even though what actually happens plot-wise or fantasy-wise could be a little crazy, I always felt like I understood the characters and where they were coming from. So I, you know, pretty much loved it from the start compared to Maniac, where I'm enjoying it, but it, even though both of them are random, there's like a something about the like kind of craziness of The Leftovers that works for me, and it doesn't work yet in Maniac.
Yeah, I totally agree. And for, I have to ask, does your roommate, the kind of guy who, or girl, I don't know who your roommate is, but do they read up on shows after they watch them? Like, is he yes. one of those guys? Or is, okay. Because, like, to me, if you watch The Leftovers and you're, like, reading all the Vulture and AV Club stuff on it, then you are, like, the rules are pretty clearly defined for me. You know what I mean? Even though it's, like, outrageous, like, I know, like, the rules kind of made more sense, I feel like, in The Leftovers. And also, like, just such a compelling plot to me personally, I feel like. It's like, grew up Christian, the rapture is, like, this whole thing. So it was just like, oh man, to watch something like kind of centered around that was really interesting. But anyways, yeah, I don't know. I have to say I'm really glad to not have to be watching. You know, we're finishing recording here, and I'm glad that I don't have to watch any more Maniac. But I do want to know what you think at the end, like, because I'm open minded. I could be convinced, but I would just I need to know more to brace for it. Do you know what I mean?
That's totally fair. I do plan to finish it, and I will probably, when we get there, let you know. Like, what do you think would have to, I would have to be, like, what would sort of change your mind if I just told you it was, like, the best show I'd ever seen? Or, like, what would you want to, like, happen?
No.
Or how would you want it to play out?
Nothing so subjective, because I think you and I actually have pretty, not completely different tastes, because we can enjoy the same thing, but we, like, are drawn very much to different things.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So, like, you telling me it was the greatest show you've ever watched means very little to me, honestly. It's more like, you know, I need to know, like, some piece. I need to be revealed something. Like, something has to be told to me about the plot or what will happen or what the point is. Maybe not all of it, but, like, an idea of what the point is, so I know to be patient for that payoff. Because, like, right now, like, I don't have any faith that there's a payoff to me paying attention to this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally does. As we were talking about, I think one other thing that occurred to me that is part of the distinction between The Leftovers and Maniac is I feel like in The Leftovers, kind of crazy stuff happens, but, like, a lot of times the characters themselves, depending on the character, I mean, some of them are a little bit, you know, a little more extreme than others, but there's generally a sense of an acknowledgement of, like, oh, like, this is normal, this is crazy. In Maniac, you kind of don't even have that sort of grounding. And so when, like, a robot shows up, you're like, is this normal? What's happening?
It's like, yeah, like, it's hard to know the difference between, so, like, there are details that are just world building, like, to show you, to ground you that this is way in the future or medium way in the future, right? And then there are, like, these extra weird, like, things that are actually used for the plot. Like, Harry Potter is a great example. There are very few things that J.K. Rowling put in to Harry Potter as details that didn't in some way serve the plot. Like, almost everything had to do with moving the story forward, right? Like, all of these little weird outside wizardry magic things came back around in these weird ways. And, like, I just don't know what in Maniac is just a detail as part of the setting and what matters as, like, a plot point in the story, as, like, a clue to what might be happening next. And so it's very untethered in that way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It you sort of don't know what to pay attention to and what to remember and focus on. And I think that's part of what is pleasurable to me about it is this sort of, I don't know where this is going. There's so many different things. And that feeling of being a little unmoored and uncertain is something that I can enjoy. But it also means that I'm definitely not in love with the show. I'm just curious and kind of interested in seeing where it goes next. One of the other things I like about it is the fact that, you know, I know sometimes I will complain on the podcast about Netflix and other streaming shows, like making the episodes a little longer than they need to be. And I feel like Maniac, usually the episodes are between like 30 and 45 minutes. And I really appreciate that. I really like that the episodes are just like in and out and they don't just keep going. They have, you know, a few kind of arcs and like distinctive scenes and then it's done and it doesn't keep chugging along.
Yeah, I will agree with that. Like, the episodes are mercifully shorter than you'd expect from Netflix. they could even be shorter, in my opinion, but they're... I mean, I've only watched 1.5. The first one could have been shorter, and I haven't finished the second one yet, so what does that tell you? It's also long.
Right, it's still, I mean, it still feels like an sort of like an art movie where, you know, there's long scenes where no one says anything and they kind of just stand around looking at something or looking sad, but there's just a little less of it because it's shorter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so like I said, let me know what you think, but as of right now, I'm done watching that.
Okay, well, we tried it out. I'll finish it up. I'll give an update in a future episode. But it sounds like we can probably just wrap it up there.
Yeah, I'm curious to if our listeners are like really into it or anything, though. So hit us up.
This is one of those shows where... So we did an episode about Insatiable a couple of weeks ago where there were at least a handful of listeners who strongly disagreed with our assessment. And that's fine, but you're not going to convince me that... Insatiable is a good show. That's just, it's not going to happen because it's not a good show. This is a show where I think actually if you wanted to make a really strong case for why this is already amazing, or if you watch the whole thing and you think it's amazing.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. Honestly, I'm very open to it because it is like curious in its oddness, but I just like can't hold on. So if someone can give me a reason to hold on, I'm ready. I'm ready to reach out and grab it.
Oh, all right, man. So
cracking myself up.
Send us an email about why Jordan should keep watching Maniac. Also, yeah. If you are interested, consider leaving us a review in Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And Jordan, thank you as always for joining me.
Yeah, of course.